Hey, everyone. This is 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back. I am Mike Nelson, and we'll tell you what the show is, what it's all about, what we're doing here in just a moment. But first, my co-host, Connor Lestoka, you have walked into the classroom, and I have written on the chalkboard in large letters, pop quiz today.
What?
Yes. Yes, indeed. So we're going to start with that. The pencils are on the table. And we have 15 minutes, and then we have a regular class after that.
Wow, but right. I had an amusing anecdote prepared about getting snow tires on my car, but I guess we're going to do this.
Hey, sit down, young man. Here we go. there's a short list of these things. Have they appeared up to this point in Tech Wars? These vehicles or vehicle-related objects or okay. descriptions, okay?
All right.
So right, it'll just be yes or no. We'll just go through and just give me your answer immediately, and then I'll tally the score at the end. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, Sonny Hokori is a no.
But Beth Kitteridge, that's an interesting question we'll get to later.
I'm ready. That sounds extremely challenging.
I think you'll do okay, but we'll see. All right. So, again, these... I'm saying, have they appeared up to this point? Like, I didn't scan ahead.
Okay.
So either say yes or no.
All right. Like, just has it been mentioned in the text?
Correct. That's as simple as that. Air racer.
No, I don't think so.
Air ambulance.
No.
Sky car.
Yes.
Space cruiser.
Yes.
Air van.
Yes.
Land cruiser.
No.
Space ferry.
Space ferry?
Space ferry, F-E-R-R-Y.
No.
Sky ambulance.
Yes, I remember that one.
Sky cruiser.
Yes.
Land car.
It's like a weird chant. Yes.
Air miles.
Air miles?
Air miles.
Like what you get when you fly on an airline?
Air miles.
No. One...
Okay. Airbus.
Yes.
Air car.
Yes.
Air cruiser.
No.
I
don't remember any cruisers.
Sky racer.
No. What was the first one?
I'm not going back. Was Sky Racer mentioned?
No.
Sky Bus.
Yes.
Sky Miles.
No, I don't remember anything with Miles.
Air Cabs.
Yes.
Sky Cab.
I'm confident about that one. Sky Cab?
Correct.
Oh my God.
Almost done.
So air cabs, I confidently said yes. Sky cab, I'll say yes.
Plaz cab.
Oh my God, no.
Land cab.
No.
And finally, sky shuttle.
Yes.
Oh man. Well, it wasn't a total disaster. It looks like you have, there are 22 questions you answered correctly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Wow.
So that's a
above,
solid F, though, I think.
That's slightly above the, you know, the chicken pecking at the random 50%, you know. Wow.
Isn't that a fun exercise? Because
that's insane.
It is, because more than half of those things were mentioned, obviously. The inventions were just to, I'll tick
Wait,
them down.
Wait, so did I get, yeah, okay, yeah, go ahead.
The inventions that I made were air racer, air ambulance, space cruiser, land cruiser, space ferry, land car, Airbus, air cruiser, sky miles, sky cab, plaz cab, and sky shuttle.
What was the real miles?
Air miles. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. A character who is going to be introduced says that.
It says measuring distance in the.
Yes. Yep.
So did I mostly get right ones that were not in the book?
I'd say you did. Yeah, it looks like you did more of identifying the falsities negative. Than, but you also, yeah, you.
But like
the errors were in both directions. Yes.
Wow,
all right. Well,
insane.
Well, anyway, that is, of course, from the book that we're currently going through, 372 pages, We'll Never Get Back, is the podcast where Connor Listoke and I, who work together over at Riff Tracks, are going through some books that we think we might hate. We've done the Ernest Cline books, we've done a Jim Tice book, and now we're working our way through William Shatner and Ron Goulart's Tech War, the first in a marvelous series.
Oh my god, that just makes you want to break something, the utter laziness and the sheer like random meaninglessness of all those compiled together. That's insane.
Well, we haven't even got to Plaz and the other thing. There was one other category that I forgot. I've got it circled for the future. Okay. I may put a quiz up on our Patreon for those of you who subscribe to this. I'll let you take a Plaz test on that. I've put together some of those.
Wow, fun. Oh, man. All right. Well, good. That was good. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder how well you would have done.
Me? I couldn't even. That's what I started to say when I was compiling it. I'm like, there's no way that, like, are these even different words? And I checked them all out. I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm just repeating myself over and over again.
Well, at some point in time, I've jotted down the note that was just like, you know, we joke about it, you know, in Riff Tracks and stuff where it's like, you know, you're in a sci-fi movie and all they've done is just be like, add space in front of anything. So at some point in time, I was like, this is what they're doing here. Just like, I ate my space food and then I hopped into the, you know, space shower. Like,
but then there are other, when he does the portmanteaus of things that are just, he just puts together words, like simple. Yes. I put on my, you know, tennis shoes, one word, or I don't know. There's a couple examples that are
Walk
so
ramp.
Banal. It's like, what? Why?
Yeah. And then we had one in this section. We'll get to it. But we had one where he, for the first time, I think, in the entire book, he shortened a word. So that was, you have that to look forward to. We can tease that. What will it be if anyone noticed it?
All right. Let's dig in up to, we are going through chapter 16 through 21.
Yes. Yeah.
You want to give him the up until this point, up until chapter 16. Give him a quick rundown of where we are.
Yeah, we had a lot of meetings in the last book, but so Jake has been awakened out of 4 years in suspended animation. He was accused of dealing tech or working with tech and sent to the cooler for 4 years. Whether or not he was actually did this or whether he was framed is something we're still working out, and we're working that out very slowly because Jake has just sort of been taking a lot of meetings about missing doctor and his hot daughter and whether or not they have been killed, kidnapped, faked their own death is sort of been the guiding action in this book so far.
You way undersold the hotness of the daughter.
I know, I'm
please,
sorry.
Please build on that a little more.
If I start talking about Beth Kitteridge, I might like come to like, you know, 10 minutes later, like slumped in the corner of my room just because her all encompassing hotness is the sort of thing that drives men to distraction.
As seen in photos too. So not like meeting her and then just being absolutely charmed by this lovely creature with her kindness and grace and poise. No. Just seeing a picture of her and going, oh, God.
Yeah. I remember my friend who worked at Jimmy Kimmel would be like, you don't understand, like, you know, when Jessica Alba was a guest, there was just like a sensation in the room like that, you know, she was, and people were like, I think she's well regarded as extremely hot. Like, you're not bringing any new information to the table here, but it was very much just like, you know, no, you don't understand. Like, you have to, if you're in the same room, it's just like you're constantly aware that she's there. And that's what pictures of Beth Kitteridge are like.
Yep. So yeah, there we are. And what will be stunning to me is, of course, I'm sure everyone is thinking this. Remember, he used tech and he began to have, it's like a fantasy world that you live out. So when it is discovered that this whole thing is some guy's fantasy,
right, yeah.
It's going to be so great because he fantasized about taking a lot of meetings. So tech really isn't all it's cracked up to be. I'll just do heroin. Thank you very much.
Yes, exactly. I might see like a dead baby crawling on the roof if I do that. Something I couldn't have done.
Something interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here we go. Chapter 16. Take it away.
Yeah, so it starts with him it starts with a bang. It's another, we talked last week about how these sort of cliffhangers and then their resolutions are a fun part of this book. But this one, this chapter starts with a, if you're looking for like a dun-dun-dun moment, this is sure as hell one of those. The air car, rented from a cousin of PJ Ramirez, started to sputter.
That's a good have detail. To read on. I have yes, to read exactly. on to find out which cousin he rented it from.
Yeah, like, is there going to be a flashback to describe this? Like, you know, PJ Ramirez, who was barely a character in this in the first place, but he's just, you know, gives him directions to his cousin's place. Did he phone ahead to let the cousin know he was coming? Like, so when he got there, was the cousin sitting there and playing like Smash Bros. And eating Doritos or... all sorts of details that have been omitted.
Yeah, he had to give him a ride over to where the air car actually was, but first he had to swing by his sister's. It'll just take a second. Come in, you'll love her. She's great. She just had a baby.
They were driving there, was there silent resentment that PJ Ramirez just wasn't lending him the car they were currently driving in? And did PJ Ramirez make up a lie, being like, no, like, you don't understand. Like, I'm totally cool with it.
I got a bunch of shingles in the back. Wife, I have to get over to my other, I'm doing a rental property.
I lent it to my buddy like 3 years ago, and he nicked a BMW in the parking lot, and my wife has not forgiven me for like the hit that our insurance took after that. So like you got to understand.
You understand? Fine. Come on, it's PJ you're talking to. Yeah, so that's quite an intro.
Yeah, but so he's looking down at the jungle below him through the night vision see through bottom of the cabin, which in the previous section was identified as Plaz Bottom, which I said was a new low in the Plaz universe, but he opted not to use that. So this might be a Plaz Bottom competitor. That could be a trademark term. We don't know. But he's about to have some car trouble, which sort of qualifies as action after all of the meetings. The sputtering accelerated to a loud series of stuttering pops, which has some nice little Dr. Seussian rhyming alliteration in there.
As the Vox box is blurting.
Yes. But the Vox box starts in Spanish, but he asks to speak in English. And he says, you know, the engine, the Vox box says this, the engine, having reached the guaranteed 200,000 air miles, is about to give up the ghost. That's where air miles was. But I didn't read air miles because I was distracted by the Vox box sort of lapsing into like beatnik slang for some reason.
Yeah. Why do they program it to do that? I didn't understand that either.
Yeah, I didn't. I meant to look up like sort of the origin of that term, but that was what I sort of associated with, like, daddy-o, like, you know, you got to get a real Hepcat to install that because it's about to give up the ghost, buddy.
Do you think that because this is a recurring theme in this, is the anachronisms of speech from characters you think you have nailed? Like, he does the biggest broad brush, you know, this is Mama. She works in the back of a hash slinging kitchen, right? And she's got a cigar in her mouth, or a cigarette in her mouth, and a hairnet on, and she's got cat eye glasses, and she's a little pudgy, and she talks tough, and she has a rough voice, right. And then she all of a sudden starts speaking like a country lawyer, or so, you know.
Yes,
this kind
or
of thing
be like
happens.
Forsooth.
Yes, this thing happens over and over again in this, and there's a couple coming up that are just baffling.
There are a couple coming up, definitely.
I don't know. Is that a plan, or is that his attempt at? I mean, I know that it's an attempt at humor, sort of. Or is it just he's unable to put himself in the dialogue of a different character? I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's a Goulardian tick, I guess. So we'll have to ascribe that to him, I would say.
Yeah.
So he tells the car that since it's having engine trouble to install a replacement. Which it can't do in this model, but you would figure that would be sort of automated if it was possible. But then he goes to do it himself after punching out an automatic flight pattern. So that's a feature that he was just neglecting to use, I suppose. He knew where he was going, but was deciding to fly manually for some reason. That was another thing that puzzled me.
Yeah, I didn't understand also that. It was just planned obsolescence with the thing, like it's done its air miles, and so now you don't get any more. Like, you just have to fill up your card, like you're at the you know, arcade or something. Is that what?
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's sort of the way things are going. You know, Apple releases new SXOSs that start to like slow your phone down to the point of being unusable. So that could just be the you know you're not allowed to hack your printer cartridge to like do that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, that's a realistic thing. We've discovered something that actually works.
Here's a a quirk of this chapter, and I think I poached a couple of these from the next chapter. The time frames he describes in this.
Oh, yeah.
Some months, a few seconds, a moment, a bit more than 3 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, another minute, for nearly 5 seconds. And we've noted this in the past. This is a Goulardian quirk that is baffling. Because if they were left out, you would obviously not notice their absence.
Yeah, but when they're there, you start to be like, wait, for what was it? For nearly 5 seconds?
Yep.
That's like a brief pause. Like it's, you know, that's a notable amount of time. Unlike 5 minutes, which makes you be like, you know, my friends and I would play this game when we'd get together, like at, you know, long, you know, cabin rental weekends, where you would have two people leave, go into separate rooms. Everyone else stays in the main room. You tell both of them they can have no clocks or anything. You say go, and they have to come in as close to 5 minutes without coming in before 5 minutes. It's way more fun than it sounds like. But oh, 5 minutes. So yeah, if they come in early, it's like the price is right, you lose, and then so you have to, like, you know, it's very exciting because when someone comes out. Right. Once you hit that 5 minutes, you start waiting because people are then, you know, able to win. It gets very intense. But once you're waiting there, you learn how long 5 minutes is just to sort of sit there by yourself. And if there's nothing really keeping you there for 5 minutes, it's an insane amount of time to stay crouched in the brush some 100 yards from the maquiadora.
Right. Yeah. So he's headed to this thing this is the workspace of the aforementioned, I think he's been mentioned, Dr. Kitteridge. Has that come up at all?
Yes. I guess it's the plump scientist gave him the key to get to there.
Yeah, the electro key?
Yes. He's going to go scope that out for any signs of foul play or, you know, just sort of find out where the doctor and his hot daughter are. So he goes in and sort of examines. It's like three connected rooms. There's a like a bunk area that sort of hasn't been completed. But the one thing that I teased earlier, the only word in the entire book that he has opted to shorten is in the kitchen. The kitchen unit was the most nearly finished, and the larder was stocked with freeze dry, all one word, and dehyde meals. So dehydrated was the one thing that he was like, this far and no further.
Oh, it's baffling. Here's another one that I picked up on, a baffling one. He goes in, he says, I smelled it mixed damp ground, burned plaz, and some chemicals he couldn't identify came out. Why not burnt plaz? That would be a thing, right? There's plaz everywhere. It's burning. You call it burnt plaz.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but as we've seen, you know, the plaz, it could be burnt plaz wood. It could be burnt plaz billiard table. It just is. He didn't want to leave out that information, I suppose.
Well, he smelled that burnt plaz for just shy of a minute.
Right. Well, you know, he didn't want to delay any longer because we're approaching what might be the sweatiest sentence in the book. We've talked about how Beth Kittredge has been described as just head-turningly beautiful and distractingly so. Even to the to the women in the book, they acknowledge how gorgeous she is. And so when Jake finally stumbles into the lab, what he paid attention to was the spotless white table at the exact center of the white room. Lying face up on the table was the naked body of a young woman. It was Beth Kitteridge.
This leads, of course, directly to my favorite opening sentence of a chapter in all of history.
Yeah, so the sweatiness continues. So let's go straight to chapter 17. How does it start?
But it wasn't Beth Kitteridge.
So that's exactly what we talked about with, like, how's Batman going to escape it? We literally saw his car burst into flames and drive off a cliff. And then the next episode just shows Batman casually getting out of the car before it burns and drives off a cliff.
Oh, and then the next sentence is, Jake reeled in the 10 feet of tongue that had come out of his mouth. He pushed his eyes back into his sockets.
Yeah. And he put the shoe that he had been hitting himself on the head with back on his foot.
He had levitated 15 feet in the air, but had settled back down to earth once he realized it wasn't.
He tucked his boner back into the waistband of his pants.
Come now. I want you. I do want to go back and just pay attention to where the spotless white table was.
Okay.
At the exact center of the white room. Okay. That phrase, just put a pin in that phrase.
Okay.
And we'll be back to that later.
Right. So yeah, just once you, with all the setup, it was impossible to read any of this next stuff without, you know, him talking about the cartoon reaction. So the thank God, Jake said he didn't want to find her dead, and I was like, well, you know, did he? Like,
but then it gets it retains its sweatiness. But I just want to stop here and ask a technical question, because I think the drinking game where a character was mentioned, where you do a shot every time an unmet character is mentioned, this is a technical consideration. It was Beth Kitteridge. Do you drink at that? If then a sentence later, it wasn't Beth Kitteridge. So right. I guess that's how you fool people into, you drank. It hasn't, right. It's not actually Beth Kitteridge.
But that was close enough that it could provoke, like, you know, you're lifting the shot glass to your lips and it's immediately undercut, like the way that works.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so it says she's an android.
Yeah, an oppressively realistic android simulacrum, which I imagine was probably going to be like the most popular Christmas gift the year that it was produced among among your single men. But the immediate detail that sort of tips him off about that is that Jake noticed now the small rectangular gap beneath her left breast. Which is like, you know, well, I'm sure he did. I'm sure that immediately caught his attention.
The sweatiness, yeah, even though we've learned it's a robot, the sweatiness, you know, starts right up again.
Yeah, exactly. For some people, it might get even sweatier. But it's, this was another good one. Beth was very pretty, and she looked so lost and vulnerable lying there in the white light.
Yeah, this is the new, there's going to be more confusion, as there was in the past, of the way that he describes androids. You know, it's like, hey, it's only an Andy.
Right.
And we know that he has some grudge against androids already. but then he'll just talk about her as Beth and her long legs and her,
right, yes.
Her hair. He's particularly fascinated with her long, dark hair.
Right.
That gets half the book from here on out.
Right. It's the sort of stuff that you would, your takeaway would be that it would be fanfic if you were reading that. It has that sort of just like weird erotic undercurrent going through the whole thing, even though the character, as it's been well established, is repulsed by even the idea of working with an android like male partner, just because he considers them subhuman.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I believe this sentence. He said Jake knew something about electronics and robotics. Yes. Obviously, he could never himself build anything this complex, but he just might be able to get this one working. Get it functioning at least well enough to tell him something.
Right.
Uh-huh. That's why he's going to get the android double of the hottest woman he or any man has ever seen up and running.
Right. Yeah, but just slipping that in, like, yeah, Jake had a degree in nuclear physics, so the repairing the malfunctioning reactor before it melted down wouldn't be that big of a problem. Might never get up and running again, but...
Couldn't build the reactor himself, but yeah, he's, you know, he's got his hands dirty on a few before.
There was a moment where he said he glances around, seeking something to cover her with, and then hey, he reminded himself, it's only an Andy, and you know I'm going to give Goulart some credit. I think this is a highbrow allusion to a story that they endlessly made us reread in English major classes, which was Cathedral by Raymond Carver. I still don't remember why. I never really understood why this kept coming up in classes, but there's a scene in there. Like, the whole point of it is that this guy hangs out, a husband hangs out with a blind man that his wife was friends with and brings home. And I think his wife passes out from drinking. But then the line was, she turned so that her robe had slipped away from her legs, exposing a juicy thigh. I reached to draw her robe back over her. And it was then that I glanced at the blind man. What the hell? I flipped the robe open again.
Wow.
So yeah, that's you know, give Goulart some credit. He's slipping in things about Andy Beth Kitteridge to reference Raymond Carver.
Very nice. Very high allusion there. Also, the aforementioned anachronism comes up right away. The hot young woman says to him, because he gets it up, you know, so that it's talking. Mm-hmm. And it says, the piece you need to close up this rent in my chest is sitting on that counter yonder.
Yep. Yep.
The hot young woman became an old prospector. Yeah. Get me up and running and we'll get your grub steak for you.
Yeah. My Andy Mule done had to be shot after she stepped in a snake hole.
Oh, this in my chest ain't nothing. It's just a little rent. Let's go yonder.
That's just, but yeah, what is going on there?
I have no idea. She has a few that she sort of lapses into, and I don't know if it's like, you know, the prim and proper, like, I don't even know what a comparison would be. But she's also sort of, we discover that she's like the ass-kicking Karen Allen character, like Indiana Jones's sidekick, or like I called her the manic pixie Terminator, because she's just like, you know, she's doing all, she's so hot, but she's also like, you know, buckle up, fly boy, like I could take this thing to Mach 2 and we'll be, you know, evade these guys, you know, type of thing.
Right.
But yeah, but first, before that, she's got to she's touching the gap beneath her breast, and then she's shaking hands with Jake. Jake hesitated before going ahead and shaking hands. Her flesh felt real and warm.
Yes. The sweatiness does not relent.
Yeah. It's amazing. Just like, yeah, we get it. Like, you know, everyone's, you know, been in the presence of a naked person before. Like, you, Jake is, you know, has a kid. Like, we understand he's been there and done that. So, like, you know, settle the hell down.
Yeah, it's been established that she's naked, but then we get descriptions like she shrugged her naked shoulders.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That was a given. We know.
Yeah. It's the kid at camp telling the lie about the girl he met up in Canada. But yeah, I was impressed that she shrugged both of her shoulders. So that might be an android thing.
It's only an android trait. Yep.
Yeah. But she says, this is another great one. She's still naked, but she says, well, what was it? 5 years ago, at least, that they sent you to the freezer? She placed the gun on a counter and started getting into a pair of neo-denim trousers.
Yeah, I just have, damn it, Goulart, written next to that. Neo-denim.
So, neo-denim. But he's left out. I mean, you know, we have to assume that since there's no detailed description of, like, the neo-lace underwear she's putting on, that she's going commando for the rest of the story, which I suppose TechWar fans are either furious about or super into.
And also, I don't think she puts on any a bra or anything before she throws on her sweater tunic.
Yes.
One word.
So, yeah, she's just, I mean, it's, I don't know. There's no way to read this without focusing on that. But once you start looking for it, it's definitely there.
Yeah. And she said about her lack of underwear, like, ain't no reason to go covering up a hog who's been, you know, salty phrase for it.
Right, yes. Yeah. Yo, the revenuers, they want to make us pay their taxes, and the last thing they'll be making me do is put on any undies.
Oh, so they off they go, right?
Yeah, well, there's one more sort of weird phrasing. Father built me to be a dead... I don't even know what voice to use, whether it's Catherine Hepburn or now we're talking like a revenuer, but like, well... Father built me to be quite a dead ringer, but then they had to rush off to visit Bennett Sands before he had a chance to complete me quite.
Oh my gosh. No, that sounds like a 20s screwball or something, you know? Bennett Sands could be played by, I don't know, one of a suave British actor. So
Tyrone Power?
Ronald Coleman, Tyrone Power, yeah.
Before he had a chance to complete me quite, though, like, what am I missing there?
Before he had a chance to complete me quite, though, I assume.
Sure. Like, to fully complete me, that's what the quite is supposed to add? Like,
Oh, anyway. The parentheticals, well, I guess they're the offset by commas in this start to get a little crazy here. So, yeah, putting those little qualifiers in clumsily jammed into the middle of sentences becomes a hallmark.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we actually got a... email about that. I think it's upcoming, but Janelle wrote in and said, like, what is the record so far for commas in one sentence? Because here's the sentence: turning, comma, slowly, comma, to Beth, comma, Swires inquired, comma, is your father alive? Has like 57. I guess that's a little bit later because that's Ogden Swires. But like, yeah, I didn't notice that. I started noticing semicolons popping up, which seemed like a new thing he discovered. But that's the commas are going to be quite clumsy coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. I had pulled that sentence out too. Amazing.
Oh, nice. It ends with he wants to like leave her alone, but does the chapter end with the alarms going off and people invading?
Yeah, they have a little. Let's see. Does it? Let me go to the chapter. They have the shootout, right?
Yeah. So the shootout comes in. The guy bursts in who tried to kill him, the cyborg, which, you know, people wrote in and they were like, yeah, cyborg is a, you know, it's a cybernetic organism. So usually that means someone who's just had a modification done, which, you know, fine, sure. Like if that's something I messed up on, like that we both messed up on, like, I guess that's on us. But
is when it just is it, yeah. just has a, I mean, is a person with an artificial arm considered a cyborg then?
Right, like a Paralympian? Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's all this guy is. I mean, he's describing a person who has just sawed off a hand and put a saw on it, right?
Right, right. It's Bruce Campbell in Army of Darkness once he puts on the chainsaw arm.
I always think of a cyborg as being much more integrated whole of, you know, mix of machinery and man.
Right.
But anyway, all right, I guess on a technicality, okay.
Right. He skates through. So I like this. This is another quirk. So this is all taking place south of the border in Mexico. And they don't really trust the reader to pick up on the places that they're identifying because, you know, why would you be familiar with places that aren't in America? But they keep emphasizing that these places are states and cities. So at that time, my father and I, and Beth rather, were planning to visit Bennett Sands shortly at the home he has in the state of Chihuahua. they'd say that a couple times, like, we're setting a course for the state of Chihuahua, which is, you know, that's how I say that I'm gonna come visit you in the state of Minnesota. I will be visiting you in the city of Minneapolis. It's just a natural way for people to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to reiterate, you know, one of us could get confused and you'd fly to Philadelphia and then where are we?
So. but yeah, the cyborg breaks in. There's a part here that I want you to, I'd like you to give me your read on how this would sound in real life. Cabron, he shouted when he recognized Jake, shedding water, making a blubbering, snarling noise. He broke free of the other two and came charging into his lab.
I have that written down as a Frankie Torres impression contest, and then we'll let the audience decide. So you make your blubbering, snarling noise, and then I'll make mine. Wow. Ooh, you went much larger than I was going to go.
All right. This is a life or death matter.
I mean, it's true.
He's got his knife hand, you know, going like a turkey carver. So,
all right, here we go. Frankie Torres. This is Michael J. Nelson. I'm represented by I'm SAG and AFTRA, and I can drive stick and automatic. And here's my Frankie Torres.
These also could double as the noise of any given man seeing Beth Kittredge for the first time.
Yes. Or the Tasmanian devil as well.
Yeah.
Before that, just a quick thing. You talked about how you awkwardly describe where you are. Here's light bulbs awkwardly described. Up above them, near the shadowy ceiling, a bank of five red bulbs of light suddenly started flashing.
Oh, man. Sometimes I just gloss over these things because I think it's like, you know, that old like word puzzle where you see I love Paris in the springtime when you just I think sometimes I just naturally read over some of this dumbest stuff because like your mind knows what they're going for. Wow.
Yep. Red bulbs of light. Making things clumsier in the future. The hallmark of the tech wars.
Right. Oh, wow. Well done. The description doesn't stop just with the noises the guys are making. The other guy who's with Frankie Torres has a mustache that looked too big for his lean face, which was another description that I thought was odd. And then, but doesn't really matter because that man quickly gets shot and stunned. They describe him thusly: the man's arms went up and he started to flap them in a limp, disjointed way, like someone who felt compelled to complete some strange exercise.
Yeah. The other arm motions are very weirdly described in this book. There's I think what the other guy does a weird death too.
Yeah, they both are sort of doing like the scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz type of dances, it sounds like.
Here's a weird description. I won't read the whole thing. I'll just pick out a little. So this is Beth firing her weapons at these three, I guess, all three of them cyborgs? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, maybe the guy's mustache looked too big for his lean face because it was a cybernetic mustache.
Her sizzling scarlet stun beam took the cyborg in the side. He made a gagging noise and his head started to tick back and forth as though there was something caught in his throat and he was struggling to get rid of it. He lurched sideways, striving to raise his gun hand, one word, and get it aimed once again at Jake. But the gun seemed to weigh an enormous amount now, seeming to be pulling him downward. Torres followed the gun toward the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets even clumsier and weirder after that.
Yeah, because the gun goes off or something. But again, that is another, all these guys getting shot by these stun guns sound like they are, you know, having Beth Kittredge reactions as well.
Yes.
That was like, I guess, what was the line? Something caught in his throat?
Yeah, his head started to tick back and forth as though there was something caught in his throat that he was struggling to get rid of. So I guess like the bass, the novelty bass thing on the wall that you press and it sings, it ticks his head back and forth.
It's like you got a popcorn hole. Like all of these are, you can sort of, you know, once you parse it, you can picture what they're going for. Like someone who felt compelled to complete some strange exercise probably just means looks like he's doing jumping jacks. Like, which is, you know, one of the more common exercises, but it's just it's a weird way to try to put, I guess he's, you know, he assumes that we all know what someone getting shot by a stun gun in a science fiction movie looks like. But once you try to put words to that, it's like trying to describe how a popular song would sound to someone.
I'm guessing that, you know, Goulart, maybe he just had a description of someone dying. He shot him and he dropped to the floor like a sack of wrenches or something. And then, Shatner is like, no, it's not colorful enough. Let me mess around with that.
Yeah, right. One time on the set of Trek, Bones was eating popcorn and it was...
His head ticked back and forth. Here's the... I told you to put a pin in that where the table was in the middle of the room.
Oh, boy.
Where did the beam hit the guy that Beth shot? The beam hit him in the exact middle of his body. So the table was in the exact middle of the room. The beam hit him in the exact middle of his body, and then put a pin in that as well. And that'll come
so
up
later.
So
if the guy was stretched out like the Vitruvian Man, like Beth managed to like pinpoint exactly where that would be, I guess.
Yeah, I wondered, is that by just distance from, you know, just like if you measure, pretend he's a plank, or is he talking about sort of the weight and the...
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a tough calculation to do on the fly, but that's our best.
Yeah, that would be the sort of thing they'd give you on, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or Jeopardy, and, like, someone would, like, protest that, you know, there are two ways to interpret that, and exactly. The one they got was the wrong one.
Yeah. You could shoot them in the exact middle of their body from the side as well, right?
Right. So, but he must, I mean, the belly button, right?
That's I'm assuming that
the, any given the idiot exact would pinpoint as the center, if you will.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So pin in that one too.
All right. Yeah. So that I think is chapter 18. They, unless you have anything else, they do away with the cyborgs, and then there's sort of like the exactly that, you know, I'm your partner from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep, they do that. And then what I imagine is probably countless other movies, and only movies, because no one has ever, like, you know, announced that in the heat of a moment that you're now partners, because that's a very weird thing to, you know, it usually would go unspoken if you were both fighting for your lives and needing to escape together.
Yep, so they go back to the sky car, which I hope you got that one right in the quiz. I better double check that later.
Oh, man, I don't remember. I mean, I knew there were car. It's either sky or air. So, like, I think sometimes there are both. Like, there was land cab and sky cab.
Yeah. Oh, there's every permutation is represented.
Oh, man. Well, why don't we do some fanfic while we parse which one of those is the correct one? And now I bet they bitching cause my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write about some fanfiction. Can't they just be happy? I no longer have to face eviction that I'm living on my life. I'm living on my inner vision right now. Oh, yes. We're back with some of the freshest fanfic on this corner of the internet. This is Real or Fanfic, and that is the segment where we quiz each other to identify actual passages from Tech War versus things that our listeners have graciously sent into us. And this has been something that's proven extremely difficult.
Not only difficult, I would say, except for one very, I don't know, an anomaly, I'd say. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. I had one successful run. Other than that, it has been a trail of disaster.
Right. Well, there's definitely some tricky ones this time. As we get closer to the end of the book, it's harder to find additional passages. I guess I should be looking in like Tech Kill for some stuff at this point in time. But we'll see how you do. I've got a little more confidence. If I was a betting man, I'd say you're going to get more than 50% this week.
Ooh,
so
I like your confidence in me. All right, let's go.
All right, let's start. Number one. As he stepped over the glow paint splattered plas gate, Jake seemed to faintly make out the red glow of an electro sig in a shadowed alcove to his left. Amigo, Jake called out as he quietly jabbed the safety of his laser gun to the off position. Are you the man they call Sombra? The lurking presence cryptically answered, Do they call me Sombra? Ciertamente. Am I merely a man? Negativo.
Oh, that's tough because that does feed into the plot where we're going to leave it at the end of the day. So
it does indeed. It does indeed.
Oh, okay.
A shadow. Here is number two. Land cars were parked at the side of the wide woodland road, land vans as well, and even some jet cycles. Pulling off the road, Rivera said, I'd forgotten about this. We'll stop here and go the rest of the way on foot. What's going on? Asked Jake. A sort of rally. The general got out of the car. War brides addressing her followers, and the events being vid-taped. Propaganda, huh? Jake joined him at the side of the road.
Okay. That's good. Wow. I didn't. Some of the words I made up are probably going to appear in this book.
Up later.
if that's a real thing, and we'll see.
Yeah. Number three. Who's paying you, winger? Torres? Sands? Hokori? Jake accused, struggling at the heavy plaz tape binding him to the white metal table, not unlike the one he woke up on in the freezer. Even more worrying were the three tech electrodes connecting his head to a very large brain box. Winger made a clucking sound, like a disapproving schoolmarm. I'm not sure which is sadder, Cardigan. The fact that you've made so many enemies in such a short amount of time, or that you still don't have a clue as to what's going on. The robot rolled up the sleeves of his paisley shirt and put on a heavy apron, like something a butcher would wear.
Oh, dang. Oh, okay. All right. That was number, is that just
three?
Number three. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Carry on.
Number four. Carmelita laughed. You've got even more self-confidence than that bastard Gomez. Can it be done? I'll need a day at least to figure out. Do you have that much time, Jake? Maybe, but not much more, he answered. Is Bennett Sands in Acapulco? He arrived shortly after Sonny Hokori. Are the two of them tied together? A safe bet, though I have no proof.
Wow. All right. How many? You said four?
One more.
One more. Okay. Five.
Last one. Winger drummed his clone fingers on the plaz oak countertop after waiting for longer than he'd have liked. Cardigan was supposed to have met him in the Neo Bodega some minutes ago. The android drummed his chrome fingers again, this time noticing a servo whine from the second joint on his third finger. Something like a buzzing sound apparently coming from his head indicated that he was logging this information for future attention. Jake Cardigan entered the Neo Bodega exactly 12 minutes and 33 seconds late.
Oh, that's good. That's
all
good.
Right. So we've got... do they call me Sombra? Am I merely a man? Negativo, number one. Number two, land cars, land vans, and jet cycles. Number three, winger made a clucking sound like a disapproving schoolmarm. Number four, is Bennett Sands in Acapulco? He arrived shortly after Sonny Hokori. And winger, number five, winger drumming his chrome fingers on a plaz oak countertop in a Neo Bodega.
All right, here's my rundown. I wrote this out in my lucky pencil, which I hadn't had for a while. So here we go.
Wow.
Number one, fanfic. Number two, real. Number three, fanfic. Number four, real. And number five, fanfic.
Well, we've got another 100%, folks.
Woo-hoo! Wow. It's the pencil. It's the pencil. Yeah.
What was the giveaways?
I thought that the paisley shirt, although... You know, all of these are completely plausible. It's just it's just the sniffing out the little just the little things. So yeah, it's hard to say. I think that the land vans could have got me, but I after having done that exercise, it's like, no, nothing is beyond him. So
right. Oh man, the fourth one, the real one with is Bennett Sands and Acapulco. He arrived shortly after Sonny. Oh man, that was just like that's further in the book. They're still talking about these idiots.
We haven't got to them yet. How is this possible?
The first one was by Tom. I thought that one was tricky. I thought the final sentence, "Do they call me Sombra Ciertamente? Am I merely a man negativo?" was really good.
Yes.
Second one was real. The third one was by Josh with Winger. Both fanfics brought back Winger. I have no idea if he's coming back. And then the fifth one was by Nick. I thought that Neo Bodega was a nice touch if he made that one up. So congratulations, everyone.
Yeah, those were very good. But, you know, you got taken down by the master.
All right. Well, yeah. So moving on to chapter 19, they're flying in the air car, sky car, whatever the hell it is. And so Beth is giving him a bit of her banter, her sort of like tough, hot but tough broad sort of like up for anything kind of banter. She's like, our partnership's going to be a especially valuable experience for you, something that'll expand your range of experience and build your character. That's how my father likes to describe anything that I initially turn my nose up at. So I assume that her father is Calvin's dad from the comics, because that's the only thing that's the main thing that he was always trying to do, is that anything Calvin didn't want to do would build his character.
Oh, man. Yeah, that sentence stood out to me. And then she says another thing that is very, very strangely worded. You were tired. A man of your age can't, after all, expect to tangle with a band of louts and not feel weary afterward.
Yep.
Is this the cyborg part of her? Like, just bad programming? What is this?
Yeah, the band of louts. Like, yeah, it's like, you know, when you get a like Alexa, you have to like read 20 sentences in your voice so it learns. You know, it can recognize any voice, but it calibrates it, you know, more to yours. Maybe like when you boot up a cyborg for the first time, it sort of goes through this position of like adapting to the person's speech patterns and all that. So it's starting off with a generic, you know, Katharine Hepburn screwball comedy thing, but it's gradually working him out of its system. I don't know.
Or it's just the you press the English thing, but you press like, you know, Liverpudlian or something, or, you know, you just missed. What's that really weird accent? The Westie or whatever. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A Newfie accent is a very strange one. I learned that earlier this year. I guess I shouldn't say that. That's not a word they like, but a Newfoundland accent is a. that's going to be what brings us down.
Oh, man. You've made a powerful enemy today.
Hey, maybe it was a word in the book. Maybe Bennett Sands calls someone that. And so now it's in play. Yeah.
It's just a shortening of a cyborg from that area.
But yeah, so she's Beth is like taking off and doing barrel rolls and everything, and she shook her head, her long hair brushing at her shoulders. "Settle down, Goulart. I can outfly most anybody, Jake," she assured him. So yeah, she's just really tough, but soft and sensitive at the same time.
Right now, just ahead in the general direction of the state of Chihuahua, the dark-haired young woman punched out a flight pattern. "Settle down,
God." And this was another thing that just wouldn't have made wouldn't have stood out to me like until a couple days ago. But so we've all acknowledged this is a terrible book. It's just dime store sci-fi. It's disposable. It's garbage. But Jake says, "Okay, I'll handle the tail gunner job." Unbuckling, he left his seat and double timed flat footed to the gunner chair at the rear of their sky car. And so as bad as that is, there is an identical scene in the movie that we're working on right now, which is Solo. There's a scene where, you know, they're fleeing some scene, and that's what Woody Harrelson's character does. He's like, you know, "You don't need me, but I guess I'll handle the tail gun," and runs back there. And, you know, so it's just that big of a trope that they're still using in big budget sci-fi movie these days.
What did I forget? Did Woody Harrelson double time flat foot it to the gunner? That struck me as very strange. Double timed flat footed.
Yeah, two hyphenated words that double-timed it to the gunner chair, flat-footed.
Double-timed it, flat-footed it to the gunner chair, but double-timed flat-footed.
Yeah, I don't know what flat-footed means as a way of describing how you're running.
Obviously, the editor had a thick pencil line through that, and then the word "stet" was written next to it the next day.
Yep. Yeah, this is good. So Jake has been widely established as being sort of like he's a drug addict. He's a detective. He got out of the cooler and his wife had left him, which he sort of took in stride. He watched his friend get attempted murdered and was sort of like okay with that. But what really he's unable to deal with from an emotional standpoint is Beth's mild sassing.
Yes.
So she says they fend off this ship with the other cyborgs in it. Not too bad. Beth brought their sky car around and into an upright position again. I suppose you're rusty, which is only to be expected. I hit the damn thing. Beth held up two fingers on her left hand. Second try. He saw the sky cruiser crash to a rough landing in the woodlands. Nodding, he left the gunner perch and came back to sit next to Beth. How about a truce between you and me? She let her eyes go wide for a second. Oh, don't you and your other partners kid each other good-naturedly now and then? Good-naturedly. So he's actually hurt by her mild, like, you know.
Yeah, he's pouting. He says he actually pouts.
Yeah. And like, so I noted that later on, she like, you know, knocks him out for a matter of hours. And he seems like much cooler with that than he did by her just sort of gentle elbow to the ribs, like by any stretch of any, you know, partner ribbing each other. It registers a 1 on the scale of 10.
Yeah. But I noted that this action scene, right? They gun down cyborgs and they jam it out of there and they have this battle in space. And then from there, they go to their hotel and have breakfast. That's how they follow it up.
Yeah.
And which leads to a Kleinian sentence here. I hadn't written this down for a while. Allowing himself to grin, Jake took her arm and guided her to a table. He's allowing himself yes. now to do things. Right. Somehow I have control over these things that happen on my face and in my mind.
He's got the little guys from Pixar's Inside Out, was it, up in his head. And they're like, you know, they're being like, come on, we've got to grin. And he's like, you know, the other guys in there like, no, don't do it. And Jake's like, nope, overruled. Grin function is allowed.
Yes. He's becoming self-aware. I was going to tell you a joke just in isolation. Nope. This is a joke from the book itself. Here you go.
Yeah,
you ready?
Get
ready to laugh.
I am.
So they sit down to breakfast and he's sort of wrestling with the Vox box. And he asked him what language he wants it in. And make it English, replied Jake. The original menu vanished, replaced by one in English. You may give your orders directly to me, instructed the Vox box. Gracias, said Jake. De nada, said the Vox box. Huh? You're not laughing.
It's not the, oh my, yeah. So that's.
Maybe it's one that, of like a Shakespeare joke. It's just a little, the references you don't get as much anymore, but it's
yeah,
really
that's probably
funny
what's going
at the time.
On. To the people of 1989, this was very echoed things that were happening in their lives countless times every day. So that's
Goulart
they
said to the editor, screams. I guarantee screams.
That's not even a blow nose, blow air out your nose kind of laugh.
No. But
I think that the thing that stood out to me as my takeaway here was one, they sat down at this cafe that has exactly a dozen small round white tables. I don't
where
know
were
why.
They located? Were they
arranged on the red tile paving in front of the flauta?
Not the exact middle, though.
but then, so Beth has these Android. Beth has these knacks, they call them, which is a Goulardian invention. That's how she knocked him out. She can just reach over and just tap you on the neck, and that will render you unconscious. And she called that a knack. I have these other knacks. And so when they sat down, he was sort of like, well, what are we going to do? Like, how, we got to make this look realistic. You can't, are you able to just gonna sit here like as a cyborg and not eat? She's like, Beth smiled. I don't require food, if that's what you're asking. But I can take in food if necessary to back up the illusion that I'm human. So I assume that the doctor has built in a fancy dump knack into his hot android daughter that allows her to dispose of that food once she does eat it.
Oh man!
Wow. Which
several discreet openings? Is that what we're getting near here?
I think it must be. I think there's a subset out there that is sweating extra hard at this point in time to at that reveal.
But yeah, so she just has a cup of coffee at this. So yeah, that the dump thing will remain
Right.
I assume unused. There's several compartments in there. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I think that's it for that chapter. Chapter 20. It ends with a new character introducing himself.
A tall, lean black man of about 35 was hurrying over.
So about
he was damn near 36 in the language of this book. Come on.
Yeah, right. And this is insane. This is truly insane. This was something that I had a weird sort of deja vu as I read this. And
I know what you're
Janelle wrote in. So the character's name is Ogden Swires.
Yep. Do you
have a deja vu?
Yes, indeed.
Because this is not, shockingly, this is not the first character named Ogden who has been in this book.
Two Ogdens in one book was what I wrote. This can't be. Ogden, as you will probably not recall, was a visitor to the freezer with his ma. I assume they had come in a Calistoga or some sort of covered wagon because they were spitting tobacco and saying, damn it, ma, he don't look good no more.
The ma was like 41 and Ogden, I think, was exactly 11. She was able to surmise just by looking at, or Jake was able to surmise by looking at them. But yeah, and Ogden, as you were scrolling, is the great and powerful Og in Ready Player One. That's Ogden Morrow, the second in command at, the company that made the Oasis.
Say Ogden again.
Ogden.
Oh, okay.
What was I saying? Ogden?
You say Ogden.
Well, that's because it's not a name that anyone has ever encountered in real life, and I've never pronounced it out loud before.
It's
twice in this book.
It's twice in this and a major character, as you said, in Ready Player One. And
that's insane.
There's only been one Ogden in the history of man. I mean, Ogden Nash, the poet, who nobody probably will recognize. He was like a light poet. He wrote humorous
nonsense.
Verse.
Yeah, very heavy quotes on the humorous.
He wrote, like, what is it? What a strange bird is a pelican. His beak holds as much as his belly can. That's the level of stuff you got from Ogden Nash.
it makes the confusion about the language on the touchscreen seem like a real side slapper. I was looking into him at some point in time. I don't remember what reason I was looking into him, but it was like the absolute definition of, you know, the bookstore category humor.
Yeah. Definitely. I just want to, I've started to put the words that annoy me. I just put them up at the top of each chapter. In this one, Faxzine, Town Edge, and Sunbright. Annoyed me. Yes. Sunbright to describe a patio, I guess. Later. And Town Edge is the hotel. They went to a Town Edge hotel. And Faxzine, of course, plays a big role coming up here.
Yeah. So Ogden is a reporter for the most popular Faxzine. And he's shown up to try to get the exclusive here. But the Ogden's got a nice quirk to him too, which is, you may not recognize it because it only shows up four times in the first page he's introduced. But he says, I've been sitting on my toque for 3 days, old man, waiting for one of her public relations people to get back to me.
I was baffled by the old man shtick and the toque, obviously. Is that Canadian or something? Because Shatner's Canadian? What?
Ha. I was so baffled by the old man. Like, is he like a Bertie Wooster character that I sort of didn't even realize toque was there until I just read it now.
Yeah, he's usually hanging out with Gussie Finknoddle. And so, look, old man.
Yeah.
Let's grab a little E&B from the sideboard, and then we'll talk about it.
But yeah, he calls him that four times in the first thing here. So it's obviously supposed to be a thing.
Yeah, it is. And he has another quirk. Remember when I told you to put a pin in that phrase?
Ooh, boy.
Where something is set, the reporter sets down his recorder, placing it in the exact middle of the tabletop. This is the third time that exact middle has been used to describe what is his obsession with?
Wow. Maybe he's like one of those touch a doorknob 13 times when you leave a room type of guys, like, or it's like a pure, like feng shui zen kind of thing. He's got it like purely positioned.
Who's your the director you like, who's
Wes Anderson
puts everything in the exact middle of the screen, right?
Yeah, it's safe to say that they're comparable and from an artistic level.
I believe that is true, yes.
That director I like.
Well, you've recommended, you're the only one who's recommended his movies to me.
I don't know that I ever have recommended them to you, because I know you do not like them. But I enjoy his work. I mean, it's better than, you know, 9 out of every other 10 movies you'd go see.
Sure.
Well, this podcast is over. It's been a good run, folks. Thank
exactly.
you.
I'm glad you brought up the knacks thing, because I thought that I missed it the first time that her knocking people out was a knack, because he says, Miss Kitteridge and I were just now discussing her knacks, and I wondered if he was getting sweaty again over there. I didn't know what knacks was a body term or something. I'm glad that was cleared up for me.
Yeah, I filled in. Had to put a piece of flesh-colored metal right below her left knack back in the office.
It was sitting over yonder, just like I told you.
It's they are definitely trying to make that a thing, because she uses the knack to quickly dispatch Ogden. Damn it.
I tripped you up.
Ogden. Yeah, there we go. What was I saying?
Ogden.
It's easier to say that. Ogden.
Neither one is particularly pleasant to get out, but yeah.
I'm guessing just based on the way this book has worked, that it's not going to be an issue, because we're never going to see this guy again. But yeah, she knocks him out, and who is there to observe her her using this this knack but a plump couple who was at the nearest occupied table and was interrupting their breakfast to stare.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing our fine tradition of plump characters in this delightful book.
I was surprised they used plump characters instead of, you know, like a dog covering his eyes or something. You know, like this is their little wah, wah. Look, Percy.
But frankly, it's baffling that the plump man was not already staring at Beth Kitteridge.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, he's probably frozen with just admiration and love. His eyes like saucers.
He's plump, so he's just doing the two forkfuls on each end, like rotating to scoop food into his mouth as he's eating burgers, distracted. But we move over to Jake having a meeting over the VidFax or whatever the hell he's using with Globo. And this was an interesting...
Globo, yes.
He's a good character. I'm worried we're going to burn some DSOTWs right now, but he asks him, have you said anything up a meeting, Globo? And Globo says, see, of course. My skills have, if anything, ripened since we last met, Senor Jake.
Yes.
A very peculiar way of describing that you've gotten better at something.
Ripened, yeah.
Yeah. You see your coworker at the water cooler, and like, you know, hey Frank, like how's Timmy doing? Last I heard, he just got training wheels on, and it's like, oh no, he took the training wheels off. His skills at riding a bike have ripened in the past couple of weeks. The other guy just sort of backs out of the break room and goes directly to HR to say to fire him immediately.
The other great thing about Globo, the singular characteristic he has, first he's ripening. But he's also sweating like a pig. He's just pouring sweat. He is, who's the basketball player famous for perspiring?
Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing was, you know, wringing out towels. He's like Rafa Nadal, just sort of when he bends over to bounce the ball, it just pours off his head.
Yes. To his credit, like Beth Kitteridge might have walked through the background of the video footage.
That's true.
So like, you know, retrieving a shoe from the other side of the room. So that could have triggered that.
Yeah, that is true. Before we get to it, I just want to note another strange hand thing. He has trouble with hands and how they work.
Sure. Like the plump doctor had like stubby fingers and like had a lump of fists.
Jake says, he's not your father. He's Beth's father. He was on his feet, jabbing a forefinger in the air. It's just once again, but jabbing means repeated, right?
Right.
Like not just one jab. And then, so he's just moving his finger up and down like we're number one.
Right, or he's trying to press like a button on the ceiling or something.
Yeah. He's trying to call the flight attendant over.
Wow, that's a good one. I like that he that in this conversation with Globo, Globo tells him he's got to go meet someone named Sombra. So yeah, we didn't have any specific meetings this chapter, but I'm glad that they're setting some up for the future because it had been a while. But Globo wiped his forehead again, glancing off screen. He calls himself Sombra, and Jake goes, "Oh, come on, the Shadow." And so I thought it was fun that in a conversation they're having about a character named War Bride, yeah. He was objecting to a Sombra's self-applied nickname of the Shadow.
Yeah. And he mentions again, he's the one who set up the Time/Life fax zine interview 2 months ago.
Right.
So when you're talking about Time Life, which is, I'm glad to hear it's still going.
Yeah, they really revived the brand.
Yeah. That you have to describe, you know, that it's a fax zine.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. Was it online only? No, it was in the actual fax zine.
Yeah, I did an interview with Sports Illustrated again.
I'm sorry, what?
Sports Illustrated. It's not that unclear. I mean, it's a major.
Sports Illustrated. I know that there's
I did an interview with the Sports Illustrated magazine.
Oh, God. Please. All
right. Yeah, that's on me.
Jesus, did it save you 1 second to not say?
Yeah, I just lapsed into the vernacular. I just assumed you would know what I was.
I was
talking about.
In the future. Let's say, look at how much time we've spent talking about it now.
Just, I know it's you know I will abbreviate things from now on. I'll say dehydrate instead of dehydrated, okay, so that will fix all of our problems.
I appreciate
But it ends with this chapter ends. With just in case, you know, people haven't lost their ever loving mind over Beth Kittredge in a matter of pages. So we have to end with something just to remind us all. So, yes, I understand. She moved in front of him, then leaned up and kissed him on the cheek, putting both arms around him. Good luck. He moved back from her after a few seconds. After a few seconds, so he sort of relished it,
mm-hmm.
Saying thanks. She smiled, asking, "First time you've been kissed by a machine?" "I guess it is," he admitted, turning away.
I was shocked that it. That he didn't mutter to himself, but it won't be the last.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I don't think it will be if I'm being completely honest.
I don't think so either. Also, in case people forgot where we are, it's all muy buen, is it not? Adios. The screen went blank, and he's going to meet him. More clues about where they are. He's going to meet him in the Toro Plaza at the Matador Pavilion. So, where are we? Where's the set again? Oh, okay. I got it. All right.
I'm going to go when we're catching the game. I'll meet you at Yankee Stadium in the baseball player pavilion.
So that's chapter 20. That's all I got. That's the meeting is being set up.
And we don't get the meeting in the next chapter, but we do get some utterly delightful. We get some great characters, richly developed characters. We get some very good clues, too, if we are still uncertain about where we are. In geography, but yeah, it starts right away. We're introduced to Marcella and Rudy, a delightful couple from Binghamton.
I could not get enough of these people. Did they say, were they from Bing? Maybe I wrote it down wrong. I thought they were from Birmingham.
Oh, I don't know.
I might have. Oh, we'll clear that up before this episode is over. So,
sure.
But yeah, Rudy and Marcella. Who are these people?
So he's on some sort of land bus that's taking him to the Toro Pavilion, or Toro Stadium with the Matador Pavilion. And there's passing through just, you know, extreme poverty on the way there. And Rudy is wanting to take pictures of all this because he thinks his photos are going to make great social commentaries. But Marcella, oh, man, Marcella is just, they're just going at it like they always do. You know, those two, she does not like his photography. She says she thinks he's taken enough photos of the social commentary down here in Mexico. And like, I don't know, that's just classic Marcella. Rudy can't do anything without her coming at him, you know?
Yeah, and I was surprised to learn that Marcella is a young woman who says about, as he's taking the shots of some guy with no legs, and he says, he thinks the shot is, he gets cut off from saying, and that makes a nifty social comp, and she cuts him off and says, he could have legs if he wanted to, the young woman pointed out. Wow. I heard on the vid news in the hotel room just yesterday that they do that for every veteran if you lose a limb in the service of your country. So then he says, Rudy counters with, maybe the poor bastard's making his own kind of social comment. by refusing to let. Yeah, they're from. I had it wrong. It's Binghamton.
Binghamton. Yeah.
Where's Binghamton?
New York. It's like on the drive up to Syracuse. I believe that me and my friends Richard and Greg got a flat tire on a drive up to Cooperstown one time and had to get it changed in Binghamton, New York.
Yeah. So their fight is all about him wanting to take photos of raggedy bums and show them to his friends.
I side with Marcella. They're a young couple. They could be on their honeymoon here, and all he's doing is taking pictures of raggedy bums to try to like score some social commentary points, like get the Instagram likes. I can't say I disagree.
He does sound like kind of a dick. I mean, let's be honest.
That was another thing where I just sort of glossed over it because there was such an exchange of like, you know, the Lockhorns or George Costanza's parents that I assumed they were like in their mid-60s.
Yeah, I that's what the dialogue made it seem like. Once again, he was doing shorthand. And for, you know, that when you watch one of those bad Bond movies from the 70s and 80s where they cut to a chubby guy from America who's chewing on a cigar and fighting with his wife.
Like, right. Yeah. Studying like a racing form on their vacation and getting into it because he left her at the shuffleboard table.
Right.
The other detail about them is that Marcella's not the only one who thinks that he's taken too many pictures. Because the lady's right, sir, said the vox box of the camera. You've taken more than enough disgusting photographs since arriving in Cuidado. So this is like a futuristic Flintstones type of thing where they've got a talking sort of like back talking piece of equipment that they're using, which is a feature like the motion smoothing on your TV. You would immediately disable as soon as you got it and took it out because it was enabled by default. But I guess Rudy was into the camera telling him to stop taking pictures.
But the VoxBox does give good advice. He says, how about instead snapping that jolly street musician coming up, the roly-poly guitar player with the tassels on his sombrero?
Which, yeah, that was great because I hadn't realized up until now that we were in Mexico. So it's good that roly-poly guitar players are wearing sombreros on the street here.
But listen to this piece of satire from Shatlart. This is it, folks, announced the sombreroed robot. The driver, by the way, was big and chrome-plated, also wearing a sombrero.
Wow.
We're stopping at the Hometown USA Cafe. They serve only the finest sans biofoods, cooked mm-hmm. American style. We'll be halting our tour for exactly 22 minutes.
Yep.
Make sure your food arrives in the exact middle of the table when it comes.
So that's, that was, you know, the delightful, I mean, a lot going on. So you got multiple sombreroed robots walking around. You've got them stopping for a needlessly specific, not round amount of time. James Wynn would hate this book for all the not round amount of times people are doing things for. And sans biofood?
Yeah, Bennett Sands.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we know that he was in the biofood industry? I guess we probably did. I just must have forgot it because I forget things about Bennett Sands because we've never been introduced to him before. It's just been people talking about him.
His wife may or may not have an affair with him. His wife may or may not be in cahoots with him. Yep. She may be opposing him. She may be chasing him and trying to thwart him. He may not be involved at all. We don't know.
Yeah, I guess since there are so many people who have let us know that they're not reading the book, we should specify that it is Ogden specified that Bennett Sands put pressure on him when he worked at the Time Life Faxine that he was being too lenient on Jake's on the reporting about Jake's trial. Bennett Sands was like, no, like Jake is guilty and too proven innocent. Like you've got to take him to task here.
Yeah, that's a great character, that Ogden. I'm talking about the first one. The second one can, piss up a rope. There is also the all caps usually implies that they're at an arcade and the ads are flashing by again. This one says, home of the best in techno sex. You want it? We got it. Is that what it was called before? Techno sex?
When they came down there and saw all the cockfight or rooster fighting and
yeah, it was described some other way. So I guess there's a variation is allowed with this sort of robot eroticism.
That might be a just having sex while Pump Up the Jam and Shake That Body are playing by the 90s group Technotronic. that was the sentence that like when Lauren is sort of like, how's the new book going? That was the one that I just like circled that word and showed it to her. And she was like, I'm glad that I'm not doing what you're doing at this exact moment.
I can't imagine her making it more than a page or two through this.
Yeah, definitely like a life's too short kind of moment. But yeah, so he gets off the bus while everyone else is waiting for their sans bio foods. And he's sort of passing by various scenes of poverty, people with no legs, like destitute corpses being pecked apart by vultures. And there's graffiti that says, like, you know, beware the Max. And he asks a one-legged man what that means. And he says, the Max is a nickname for Las Máquinas, which means the machines. And Jake says, and who are they? And then the one-legged man made a dry rasping sound that might have been a laugh.
Yep.
You'll find that out tonight. So it's like that would be a hell of a reveal if Winger is down here posing as a one-legged Mexican homeless man. That would, you know, that would be another kudos to you for coming up with a twist I didn't see coming. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think so. You mentioned the graffiti, beware the Max. Do you remember how it was scrawled? It was scrawled in glow paint on the crumbling plasbrick wall of a long defunct servo repair shop.
Wow.
Yeah, he's really laying it on thick in that one sentence there.
It's the future.
Yes.
Brother.
Oh, and I forgot to mention that cybersex ad that I was just talking about.
Technosex?
Technosex. After he reads it, Jake murmurs, subtle. So the book has become self-aware now.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess in theory, like, we didn't start seeing these until you went south of the border, so there might not be this might be sort of like still a line drawn in society where clearly, even though everyone's got Beth Kittredge replicas in their closet that they're humping away on, like, it might not be out there in public, you know, until you go down to Mexico.
I'm glad you went all the way with humping all the time. We weren't sure what you were getting at there until.
Well, yeah, that's sort of it. It ends with Jake sees like a young, like 12-year-old girl go running by, like with bruises on herself, and then another cyborg with a knife hand starts chasing after her. And so Jake sort of thinks to himself, like, well, this could all be a setup to lure me somewhere, but you know, I'm a good guy, so I got to go after her. And that's where this section ends.
They call that in screenwriting, he's saving the cat. He's got to go. Yeah. He's got to go do it. You knew that she was, I think you said 12 correctly, because she was a thin, dark-haired girl of no more than 13.
I did not intentionally do that.
She was damn near 13.
Yeah. In this society, like, they like give you a brand or something on your forehead once you turn 13. So by not seeing that, you'd know that she was no more than 13. Yes. Oh, I guess it would be 14 when they give you that. No meetings. There was not a single mention of Sonny Hokori in this chapter, which I was stunned by because he was pretty much the main character until now. But you know, you got to meet Beth. You got to find out the ability of her to have knacks, which I guess will probably be deus ex machinas as we come across them coming up.
Yeah, sorry.
But that you know, if you would like to bet that she doesn't use something that we've never heard of to get out of a sticky situation, I'll take that bet.
Well, I think we still haven't met Beth. That's the thing.
Right, I guess so.
I mean, we are going to meet her, of course, right? And Jake is going to end up with her. Unless, of course, again, he's just doing tech in this whole... But if this turns out to be him just doing tech and this is his imagination and he's still up in the freezer or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, we got an email about that I'll read later. But like I would bet if I was, you know, gun to my head, I would bet that it's not just his tech fantasy. I would bet that he does meet Beth Kittredge, the real one. I'd also, you know, but I'd also be willing to, say that he like, changes his mind about Andy's and ends up with the, android replica of her.
Ooh, I guess that does make sense that they're moving there. He certainly isn't going to reconcile with his wife. I assume she dies because there are so many more tech books and to be a, to be a solitary, you know, Bogart type with, you can't have a, you know, a wife and a kid.
Yeah. He needs to be free. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess his son too, though, he's sort of like in the picture. So whether he meets and reunites with him, whether his son was sort of coerced into this arrangement where he had to transfer down to a school in Mexico, whether he misses his dad, I guess that's a, that I'm not positive about.
Wild theory here. His son is Bennett Sands. I'm going to go with that. If it turns out to be right, I'm going to go to Vegas and bet on it.
Right. That would be pretty spectacular. But yeah, we're, you know, I think we're a third. Yeah, we're not even a third of the way through this book, which is stunning. That is stunning to look down there and realize that now. But, you know, I guess there's still a lot that can happen. But let's do some reader emails.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the dinner. I'm going to cruise out, man. Stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
All right, steal away.
Yeah, let's get it started. We got some good ones this week. This is from Lene. I would like to call attention to another of Goulart's writing tics. This is a good one. I had not picked up on this. His use of the phrase brushed at. I just searched and it turns up 6 times in the book, mostly used by women brushing at their hair. How the hell do you brush at something? Do you just make the brushing motion but never actually make contact? I can't even visualize what that would look like.
Wow, that's so great. I did not pick up on that. I noticed that her hair was brushing against her shoulders at one point. But yeah, I didn't notice it in other contexts. That's a good one.
This is from Brett. He has another just to make me not seem like a gigantic douche for bringing up Raymond Carver. He has another sophisticated literary reference that he wants to is more than he should credit Techware with. But he says Wintermute was the name of the mysterious employer in Necromancer who turned out to, spoilers, I mean, okay, if anyone's upset by this, Wintermute turned out to be an AI. Winter Guild turning out to only exist as a projection, if that is in fact the case, could be seen as a tribute if you were generous or just lifting plot points if you're not. If that's the case, then the fact that William Gibson's, the author of Necromancer's first published story, was called Fragments of a Hologram Rose might explain the otherwise odd decision to give the guy a rose tattoo for his hologram projection. It's not much, but in our harsh world of tech crime and plas justice, you find literary depth where you can. I agree, Brett.
Wow, wait, who had the... Who's
Winterguild? Winterguild was the
Winterguild. Like, that's right.
The guy
that's
that drew him to the amusement park in the last episode.
Right. He's very briefly in there. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, just stealing stuff from smarter books in your dumb book. I would not put that past either of these two guys. Either what did you call him? Ghoul Shat or Shat Ghoul?
Shatlart.
Shatlart. That's that's even more revolting than Ghoul.
That's a terrible phrase.
So this is the one that I mentioned earlier. Doug writes in, has Cardigan been under the influence of tech ever since he returned to his apartment? This is the question that's, the sort of inception-y twist here. It's possible that when he couldn't sustain the family reunion scenario, he moved on to a preposterous fantasy in which his old partner appears and takes him on a wild adventure populated by old friends, enemies, and acquaintances. When he's confused by things he should understand, which happens, alarmingly often, that's his mind pushing against the fantasy. Are Shatner and Goulart just setting us up for a Shyamalan twist? Glad you guys have kept the podcast going beyond the Kleinverse. So, like I said, I would bet against that if I had to.
Yeah, he used the word, he was fairly generous with his description of what this tech adventure is. Like, takes him on a rollicking adventure? If only. I mean, I guess he gets to see the unbelievable Beth Kitteridge. So that part of it, I guess, would be worth the tech jump there.
Yeah, I mean, it would be bad and hacky, which is not out of the question for these two guys, but I just can't imagine it would happen. Anyway, so this is the last email. Nick said, I've been enjoying this run of episodes so much that I decided to take a deep dive into William Shatner's Tech War. I purchased the next 5 books in the series in very good condition, hardback for $17 for all of them. I also got the Plaz DVD box set with all 4 TV movies and the 18-episode series, also for $17. It seems that the price of Techware things after 24 years is $17. Australian, obviously, proved me wrong. And then he starts to talk about the movie. We're going to have to do the movie, but the first of the TV movies is exactly how you would expect 2045 to look in 1994 on a TV movie budget directed by William Shatner. It is amazing. The only real criticisms I have are these. The word Plaz is used exclusively to refer to money and is infrequently heard, which is a betrayal of the vision, I have to say.
Totally.
And Sid Gomez has perhaps the most immobile hair I have ever seen, which is, yeah. Yeah, these are things that if they made the movie now, people would be complaining about on the internet nonstop. But he says, Ready Player One and Armada were so hard to get through that I didn't even finish Armada. But the Eye of Argon and Tech War have been amazing. It's like the difference between a Riff Tracks commentary for a Transformers movie and the one for Roadhouse. In both instances, you get to enjoy the jokes, but for one of them, you also have to watch Transformers.
Well, so that's nice, well said. Nice, that's fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, so thanks for writing in emails. A lot of those came from people who have been supporting us on Patreon, which you can do too at patreon.com/372pages. Everyone there gets the episodes earlier than everyone else, so you can not have to wait. You can taunt people who don't have them. You can write in emails to us before everybody else, and those are the ones that I tend to pay more attention to.
And there's bonus stuff up there, and I'm gonna pop a bonus quiz up maybe if a couple days from now. I'll put up the Plaz quiz. So
ooh, all right. So you can take the Plaz quiz. You can hear us calibrate our tastes, and we'll have something a fun story Mike told me about his long lost nickname. We'll be posting that sometime before the holidays. So yeah, we really appreciate everyone who supports us on Patreon. Let's do our sentences.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence ends with a period. Or an
always love to hear it. All right, what do we got?
All right, we've got some good ones, some ones that did not get touched. And so this is good. Christina submitted an android simulacrum of Beth containing all her memories, feelings, and so on. So, you know, just sort of throw in everything else that's supposed to be in there.
And so on. Is that, that's getting near Klein.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, a variety of classic 80s dance moves, that sort of thing. Just like, I'm not going to describe it. We all know what I'm getting at here. Blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Right.
She also submitted, he was already pretty well soaked, so the extra 5 minutes didn't appreciably add to his dampness.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
I think I have that there, too.
Justin submitted, how to spice it. This is his commentary. How to spice it. The only action scene you've written in several chapters. Goofy alliteration. And his sentence was, her sizzling scarlet stun beam took the cyborg in the side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tom said, his sentence was, there is nothing in there but a picnic hamper. He pried it open and found only the remains of a picnic lunch from some months ago. And he adds, apparently Yogi Bear was the cousin of J.P. Ramirez, from whom Jake rented the air car at the start of chapter 16. Which maybe they then didn't include that, like we were talking about, because they couldn't get the IP rights to his character.
Right.
Janelle submitted the sentence. This is just the sentence. Nothing happened. Which is, you know, just sort of like a good that. Summation of the last episode we did. I've got a couple. This is my runner up. He's when he was installing the engine. The sentence was, Jake gave the newly installed device a moderate punch with the left fist. The left fist, not his left fist. Didn't punch it with his left fist. He just with the left fist is a very odd way to phrase that.
Yeah. There was a sentence. I pulled that out and noted that because there was something else about punching right after it, but it was unrelated. So you get kind of a double dip there of a stupid punch line. And then another one followed it, but I don't have it right here. But
my winner, and I'm glad we didn't talk about this because it was, I had a bunch marked. I write down DSOTW. I used that acronym during the recording and didn't realize people might not know what I was talking about. But I had written down like five, and we talked about some other, like the Up Yonder and stuff. But this was the last one, and by the time I got to it, I was like, oh, well, this is obviously the correct one. You pay my fee, I do my job. All routine, Jake. Said the sweating fat man.
that could be Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, it would really work if you just put that into at the end of, you know, the American Librarian Association find their top book quotes of all time and just appended that to the end of it.
Yeah,
it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Said the sweating fat man. Hang on, I've got a few more called up. This is from Les Miserables. Even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise, said the sweating fat man. let's see. So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past, said the sweating fat man. Works the best about anything.
Oh, yeah. What's the first line of James Joyce, stately plump Buck Mulligan descended the stairs? That would fit in perfectly.
Yeah, that would work well in this book, too, with the plumpness.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm shocked that the simple sentence, but it wasn't Beth Kitteridge, didn't make anybody's list. But I guess that you have to know the context of it.
Sure.
Mine doesn't have a lot of fireworks. Just think of it. If you read this sentence anywhere, you would try to figure out what the hell is going on. Several plazwood cartons were stacked in a corner, festooned with cobwebs and splotched with black mildew.
Festooned and splotched all at once.
But festooned, I mean, that's usually a deliberate, like you're festooning a Christmas tree, right?
Yeah, decorative.
So like. I don't think they festooned the... plazwood cartons. Anyway, just jumped out at me as kind of dumb taken as a whole.
Sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the best thing about these is when you get so used to his writing and word choice that when he does pick words that are so obviously out of character that they really do jump out at you.
Yeah. Well, wow. We still haven't met Bennett Sands. We haven't met Sonny Hikori. We haven't met Dr. Kitteridge. We haven't really met Beth Kitteridge.
We've met two characters named Ogden.
We met two Ogdens, and we haven't met his wife, and we haven't met his son, Danny. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I suppose so. Like we said, there is a third of the book left. So that's been one Ogden through each third of the book. Will there be a third one?
Oh, God, that would be the greatest thing ever.
That would be the greatest book in literary history.
And absolutely no mention of any relation to it. And just...
Right, yes, they just keep coming. Yeah, I mean, some of them, with the couple from Binghamton, Marcella and Rudy, it almost reads like if they had written this book now... You'd be like, oh, like he did a Kickstarter to write this book, and this was like the highest tier reward. Like, I'll make you a character. There you go. And then he's like, oh, crap. Like, two guys named Ogden supported this at the $2,000 level. Like, what am I going to do? Like, it's going to be so weird. Like, you know, but I mean, that would make sense. But maybe that's just what he was doing in this book.
Could be. And yeah, obviously, Marcella and Rudy paid the VIP. To be in there.
Yeah, because their hometown in there too. Yeah. Wow. Well, delightful. It's been quite a journey. I look forward to the next time. Let's read through chapter 26 for next time. I think we've got three more of these to stack up before the book ends. And then we'll probably do the movie.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Is it a full 2 hour? Because as I recall, that's obviously just an hour TV show. Maybe the pilot was 2 hours?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember what I found. I found the pilot. I don't remember if it was a TV movie or not, but we'll find that. Like, we'll get that up for everybody. I mean, maybe not for everybody. Maybe we'll make that Patreon exclusive. I don't know. We can do whatever we want.
That's right. As you were describing that, the guy wrote in about the movie, I was thinking of, so Shatner didn't get his vision in there of, you know, the correct plaz. And I just picture him at the end of the day, you know, his complexion gray, having fought with the studio executives over if I don't get plaz, people won't know what I'm talking about. It's like, look, it's confusing. Take it out or you don't get to make it. Right. Just imagine him just drained and sapped of any soul or strength after shooting it.
Yeah. Being like, I'm a hack. I made this hack version of Tech Warden. Right. I've lost my artistic integrity by filming this garbage version.
That's right. Well, I look forward to it. Thank you, Connor, and I thank you. And Patreon people, we thank you for joining us on this journey. And we'll be back soon with another edition of 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back.
Ogden.
Clipboard.
Leave that in.
All right, I will.